I'm Dan Cassidy, and this is UBS's Top of the Morning. Today, we recap the week that was, including thoughts on key macro data points, the latest on U.S.-China trade, notable global summits, and more. Plus, we will, of course, preview for you what you can expect in the week ahead. My guest today joining me here in the studio is an investment associate analyst, Mike Gord, from the UBS Chief Investment Office. So, Mike, welcome back. Happy Friday to you, and thank you for joining us this week.
Happy Friday, Dan. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. So, Mike, I know a short while ago it was 8:30 Eastern here. We did receive the November employment report. Can you walk us through the data a bit and speak to how it measured up relative to the expectations of the Chief Investment Office?
Yeah, absolutely. So CIO's expectation was for 179,000 jobs. So coming in at 266, this was great surprise to the upside. So on top of beating the consensus expectations by more than 85,000 jobs, the prior 2 months' payroll numbers were also revised up, a total of 41,000. So net-net, great for non-farm payrolls. Both private and manufacturing payrolls came in above expectations. It's important to note, though, that the end of the GM strike and those workers returning to the workforce were captured in this report. So that probably helped pad the figure by about 40,000 to 50,000 jobs. But after the weaker ADP payroll number earlier this week, this is definitely a relief for those of us concerned around a potential tariff-related slowdown that could lead to fewer job openings.
7,000, right, on Wednesday?
I think it was around there. It was very, very low. So what this print today does is it brings back the six-month moving average back up towards around 200,000, which is kind of where it's been since the start of the expansion. So we had a little bit of weakness over the past few months, trended downwards, but this definitely helps us back above trend. So no related slowdown, no big surprises here to the downside. Definitely a strong number this morning.
Okay, so as you alluded to, it sounds like a couple of one-off caveats contributed to this blowout number for the month of November, the non-farm payroll number, that is. Maybe let's step away from the employment data. I know we did receive some other notable macro data points over the course of this past week. Mike, what can you recap for us there?
Yep, so a couple notable highlights. We got the results for the ISM PMI for November. It fell to 48.1. That's lower than last month and lower than consensus, which it actually expected an improvement on the October number. Amongst the details, new orders and new export orders both fell. Production improved modestly, but all components are still below 50. Anecdotal comments from the report were mixed, suggests no real change in the underlying trend. We keep the view that manufacturing sector is in a mild downturn, and the outlook going forward really does hinge on any outcome of the U.S.-China trade talks. Beyond that, we also got the reading for the non-manufacturing index, and this also fell last month and also came in below expectations. The headline reading of 53.9, though, is still above that 50 bifurcation mark, and it's still signaling trend-like growth. Comments from participants didn't sound like they were expecting a sudden deterioration of economic conditions. So assuming no further trade escalation, economy should continue to grow at or probably just shy of trend looking forward.
So you did mention, Mike, the U.S.-China trade talks. And throughout November, we did hear a lot of positive developments on that front, which contributed to some nice gains in U.S. equities. However, over the past 2 weeks or so, we've been hearing more heated rhetoric, which causes some concerns. Is this phase one deal going to happen? So where do we currently stand there?
Yeah, so we try not to give too much bearing to this heated rhetoric. Just we know that this is how these sides operate. This is how this whole conflict has sort of worked. That being said, as each day passes and we get closer to that self-imposed December 15th deadline, we're definitely nervous that there's an increased chance that the negotiations do break down. We still think that a limited deal does get made. There may be a limited tariff rollback for some limited agricultural purchases, along with an agreement not to increase tariffs on December 15th. Markets have been pricing in the deal for some time. So if we see that talks actually do break down, there's definitely going to be, one, probably a serious escalation between the U.S. and China, which, two, is going to lead to a pretty sharp pullback in the market. And beyond that, it just keeps the uncertainty that has been overhanging us for these past, what, year and a half?
Yeah, since 2018, yeah. Maybe even late 2017.
Yeah, so
a long time.
That's probably the most important part here is removing that level of uncertainty. Businesses can continue to spend. Capital plans can be put into action. So no clear outcome yet. We still think that they're going to come to some type of limited deal, though.
You mentioned December 15th is that key deadline, which is just over a week away.
Exactly.
So something to look out for there. Maybe sticking with geopolitics for a moment, if we go across the Atlantic over to London, England, I know that city hosted this week's key NATO summit. You had a lot of meeting of the minds. What can you share with us as far as notable highlights and takeaways, Mike?
This kind of felt like there was more gossip than meaningful news out of the NATO summit this week. There were no real unexpected major developments or breaking news. So most traditional news media focused on a viral video clip of world leaders apparently having a laugh at the expense of the US president. Trump wound up leaving the summit early, which, regardless of the circumstances, isn't out of his character. He's done that at other multilateral meetings like this. So no real concerns there. The bottom line, though, is NATO's still around and looks like it's going to be hanging around for some time to come. I think the most positive spin of all of this is that NATO exists after this summit. The U.S. remains a member, remains committed, even after 3 years under an administration that has railed against this organization and other multilateral trade and security organizations. So no big news other than that NATO continues.
Okay, NATO is still intact.
Yeah.
That's good to know. If we go a bit further east to Vienna, Austria, I know that city's hosting this week's OPEC and OPEC Plus meetings. I believe as we're recording, Mike, the OPEC Plus meeting's in progress, and the plus, of course, accounts for Russia. But based on what we've heard thus far, what can you share with us? And any notable reaction in oil markets?
Yeah, so oil markets have been jumping around yesterday, this morning. That being said, no real unexpected developments. It sounds like they're going to continue. They're going to introduce another 500,000 barrel per day, set of cuts on top of the 1.2 million barrels per day of cuts that they implemented last year. The details in terms of how the cuts are being divvied up by OPEC and OPEC Plus members hasn't yet been released. However, our view is that these cuts are fairly limited and they aren't going to be enough to support prices in the coming quarters. It might be a near-term positive, but over the next few quarters, lower global demand, rising U.S. supply, these things are really going to weigh on oil prices. Additionally, there's the fairly decent chance that these more macro overhangs end up driving prices down below $50 a barrel WTI, towards $50 Brent, which would definitely make it more difficult for some of these nations to balance their budgets. And I guess as a note, this would be a unfortunate circumstance following Saudi Arabia's successful IPO of their state oil company just this week. So
okay, so I'm sure over the weekend we'll hear even more in the way of takeaways,
yep.
And I'm sure on top of the morning we'll have a segment dedicated to some key takeaways and highlights next week. So that's something to look forward to. Maybe one last question before we wrap up our conversation for today, Mike. Looking ahead to next week, what will you be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, so a couple more macroeconomic data points we get next week. We get a couple different readings of inflation, PPI and CPI. So we'll be watching those because they'll be a guide as to what the Fed might be thinking about possible rate cuts or hikes into 2020. And actually on the Fed, we do get their December rate decision on Wednesday. We think that they'll likely stay on hold until they see further evidence of the three cuts that have already taken place this year really beginning to work their way through the economy. But without large meaningful trends higher or lower in these inflation readings, very likely that they just stay on hold until something economically materially changes, as Fed Chair Powell has stated. That material change could very well be a result of increased trade tensions. If Trump decides to go forward with these December 15 tariffs or further ratchets up the rates on products that are already under tariffs, that could definitely lead to a downturn, which the Fed might respond to by cutting rates. So if we do get that type of increased trade tension scenario that leads to a material slowdown of U.S. growth, we do see the Fed likely cutting rates up to three times, which would leave the upper range of the band at 1%.
Okay, so between inflation data, central bank speak, those press conferences by Jerome Powell are always interesting.
Yes,
to be market
yes.
moving. So some key items to look out for in the week ahead. But Mike, as always, appreciate you dropping by the studio. Covered a lot of ground all across the globe. So really appreciate your time and insight. Hope you have a nice weekend. Stay indoors. It's going to be cold.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Again, we've been joined by Mike Gord, Investment Associate Analyst from the UBS Chief Investment Office. And there are many publications available now up on UBS Online Services. If you are a client of UBS, be sure to contact your financial advisor. They can provide any of the reports directly to you. Top of the morning. We'll be back again for you on Monday morning. Have a great weekend, everyone.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.